The AI era is here, and so is content chaos.
When people come like, well, I hate to tell you this, but this is going to be a very complicated one. It starts with an apology. We're like, probably so, but we have been through this.
Enter Ravi Singh, president and chief product officer at Brightspot.
We want to be the best CMS company in the world. Period, full stop, bar none.
In this episode, Ravi shares how to bring order to the chaos.
Where there exists a higher velocity of content, you need control, making sure people are always in the loop, and you need context. Is AI following my brand guidelines?
IT leaders everywhere are facing a wave of new challenges. Bloated content ecosystems, AI-generated noise, governance nightmares, and the growing pressure to do more with less.
People are trying to use AI for more of the strategic stuff and getting disappointed. It actually takes a lot of intentionality and effort to take out the mundane tasks.
If you're leading digital transformation or just trying to keep your CMS from imploding, this one's for you. So welcome, Ravi. Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get here to Brightspot?
I've been a builder all my life. I started in the healthcare space for about 7.5 years. And I have a polyglot sort of a building experience. Healthcare, automotive tech, food tech, advertising, edutech, and then most recently at a company called auction.com, where I led product and engineering.
Yeah.
I created my own AI startup. It was all the rage. I sat on the board of Brightspot, and the CEO of the company said, rather than telling us what to do, why don't you come in and help us? And so an opportunity opened up to become take an operator role. Here I am, leading product engineering with some of the most capable minds in the CMS and content management space.
That's awesome. It sounds like you're very passionate about a lot of things. I mean, you got a very varied past there. I mean, like, what is it that sort of, what's the common link that kind of binds it all together for you?
I think I like when organizations are going through massive transformation.
Yeah.
My life has been more a series of coincidentally lucky happenstances. I happen to be the right place at the right time with the right industry. Healthcare in the early 2000s, advertising tech and food tech before, you know, we started building food delivery applications, before food delivery applications or online commerce, food commerce was a thing.
Yeah.
And then I've worked at the intersection of startups and PE-owned companies. I built my own company, sold it in 2010. I think something about the inflection points in an industry that's very attractive to me. And now I would say previously it was happenstance and happy coincidences. Now I have the wherewithal to be able to see where those inflection points will be and be able to put myself in those positions. So taking luck and formalizing luck a little bit to being able to be there. And I think right now for us, when I think about where we are from a content perspective, the velocity of content is increasing. Content management is going to be an important consideration. Knowing what content was created by people, the reputability of content versus AI. I think being able to mark, understand, and enable those kinds of capabilities and technologies is going to be a very important thing over the next 12, 18, 24, 36 months.
Yeah. There's a saying that, you know, luck is preparation plus opportunity, right? You know, so it sounds like that's where you're at in your life here, right?
Yeah. I mean, before it was, I would say coincidences happened. And now what I like to think is I'm designing coincidences.
There you go. I like that. Designing coincidences. That's awesome. That's good. Great advice for any entrepreneur out there too, right? So tell me about Brightspot. And you mentioned AI in particular. And I think we're in a world right now where we're being flooded by all sorts of different AI content, and not just AI content, but just content in general. There's so much content, right? Tell me about like what Brightspot's doing and what let's review what Brightspot even is for mm-hmm. folks who are unfamiliar with it.
We quietly deliver for some of the loudest brands in the world. Three of the top five most valuable companies are customers of ours. Many of the Fortune 100 companies are customers of ours. Many of the Fortune 500 companies are customers of ours. We are purpose-built for large and complex content places, which is why some of the biggest companies use us and are happy with us. I'm just coming out from a customer advisory board right now that we had in Austin, and to hear from our customers about why they are so passionate about the product we build. And I think Brightspot, over a period of a decade and a half, has built a very intentional product where our focus was management of content, enabling content creators to have the best experience possible, providing the organizations that use us with a high degree of control possible.
Yeah.
And all of these capabilities, visibility, workflow, control, might have seemed potentially overkill for some of the mid-sized organizations.
Uh-huh.
But those are the kinds of capabilities that is exactly needed where AI is making content come at the velocity that it is. And so you need two things. Where there exists a higher velocity of content, you need control, the mechanism to control it, and you need context, right? And what was created by AI, what was not created by AI, is AI following my brand guidelines, contextualizing the content that is coming out, really, really focused, and then controlling the content, making sure people are always in the loop.
So I'm gonna fess up. I've actually used Brightspot at a company, and so I've had that experience. And you know, when you're looking at tech companies, they have an enormous amount of content. I mean, just from marketing perspective, from white papers to you know, product specifications and all sorts of things like that. And aggregating that content and presenting it out in a way that's useful to your company and to, you know, your customers can be a really challenging thing. And you know, we start talking a little bit about, you know, the idea of like content sprawl. You got, you know, content tucked in this corner, you got content tucked in that corner, all over the organization. There's people producing content, but how do you make that useful, actionable, and useful to your business? Can you talk about how Brightspot does that?
Content sprawl is a really big thing. Organizations couldn't begin to tell you where half of their content is. They have 17 versions of the same policy, 25 versions of the same image, 150 versions of the same article. And what Brightspot does is we have built over a period of time very succinct workflow that A, identifies the most relevant, most timely content that gets triggered and appropriately gets pushed out to the customer. So that's one. That's one way we manage. Now, at the end of the day, have we solved the problem for content sprawl? I'd like to say we have a better grasp of it, but I don't think this is something we have solved, just because we have solved it potentially for content that sits in our ecosystem, but there's content that sits a lot of content sits outside of our ecosystems too.
Right.
And what we've done over a period of decades is built connectors to being able to assimilate this content and provide workflows that allows you to manage the content sprawl. Like I said, I don't even solve the mechanism of content sprawl creation. Management, yes, checkpoint, we got it. But creation, I think it's a matter of policy and process and procedure inside the organization that we're constantly trying to put innovative measures, identifying duplicative content, helping people with delete, content expiry, timelines, who has access to what content. And so we're always playing this defensive game.
Yeah.
But I think still work needs to be done. Now, I hate to say it, but AI will provide some capabilities in being able to look at content in a much more longitudinal manner that allow you to identify duplicative content very quickly and potentially being able to scrap out some of this content quickly.
And don't be sorry to say AI is going to do that. I think that we're in a world now where AI is doing a lot of useful stuff now. And I think, you know, one of the challenges is these are some like really sometimes boring and mundane tasks to like go through and see which is the most current document, or if there's three different people created a document about something, which is the best one.
Yeah.
When you're in an organization with that much content, it gets really hard to do that. So I think really, realistically, the only way is to add automation into that process, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And exactly what you said, you know, more and more automation is coming. And this is like these mundane tasks can very easily be automated. I'll give you a good example. I use this all the time. You have two HR policies. One says vacation is 5 days. Another that says vacation is 6 days. Mm. Which one is the right one? Is
right.
The 5 day one more right? Is the 6 day one more right? And so being able to understand not just the provenance of the document, the time of creation of the document, the recency and the frequency of the document, all of these things go into understanding the relevance of the document.
You know, you mentioned the idea of governance around all this. How does Brightspot manage to the company's policies, the company's branding, the company's tone of voice, even just like that, the example you just gave with regard to the policy around vacation.
Yeah.
Where does it go to find that information? And is that all AI doing that?
Great question. On the AI policy, look, our commitment to our customers is to not supplant their AI policy, but to support their AI policy. It is to comport our products and capabilities that essentially leverages their AI policy. So we have a very frank conversation with the customer as they're onboarding and as we turn on some of these AI capabilities to really get a deeper understanding of the AI policies that they do have. We talk about our features and capabilities that will enhance the work, but really it's understanding what models can they use, whether it's externally hosted, internally hosted, what kind of guardrails would they want to turn on. So that's on the policy side. The second is, as we are doing the implementation of our product, we really like to ask them questions. Where are these information wells? What would you like AI to help support? Do you want titles created? Do you want content variations created? Do you want different versions of the same image created? Do you want only colors changed? And so we have a very comprehensive AI sort of policy manager that allows you to turn on and off the AI capabilities that you're using inside our product. So that's the second way we help. And the third and the most last is, throughout our product, we don't see AI as something, you do something and you do something with AI. We feel like AI is going to be a supportive and assistant, ever-present assistant in the way you do things. But all of those supporting structures, the scaffold, if you will, of the AI that's there, can be turned on at a very fine-grained level, turned on and off at a very fine-grained level. So we've thought about policy. We've thought about processes that our customers want to follow in terms of AI adoption. And then finally, our product manifests those policies and processes into the way our product behaves or manifests the capabilities of AI inside our product.
And so would the AI understand things like brand guidelines and that sort of thing? I mean, is that something you can just say, here's my branding document, make sure everything adheres to this?
Great question. Yes. The way we have built our capabilities is, not only could we have branding, and you could give it a set of branding and say, always follow these brand guidelines. For example, don't use yellow. I don't know. People don't like yellow. They don't want yellow.
Your competitors use yellow.
Yeah. We love red.
Right.
So there might be some sort of specific guidelines. I mean, color, I use flippantly a color, but it could be as nuanced as the kind of tonality, the kind of formality that you introduced in speech. And all of these things are a set of instructions that we provided to the models we use. So that's one. The other thing is, we've also got author personas. And so what you could do is feed it a set of personas, author personas, and not only will it follow the brand voice when it's creating a micro content or a summarization of a larger content that I have authored, it will use my persona, the inflections I like to use, the words I like to use in creating the summarization or the FAQ pages for it. One of our customers, media customers, recently made a tweet about the kind of guidelines they have. And it was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek tweet, but it was very emblematic of the kind of stuff that we help people incorporate. No commas, semicolons are this. And so it could be as nuanced as that. It could be grammatical. It could be voice. It could be tone. It could be colors. It could be impressions. And all of that gets incorporated in the instruction set that we give to the large language model to ensure brand, voice, consistency.
Well, and I think that's super useful for a product like BrightSpot, because you're dealing with both internal documents and external documents. And I think for people who have never used it, there's all sorts of classifications for like the security of the document, who has access to the document, things like that. So you can have, you know, when you're speaking about like the voice, you know, for a technical white paper or something like that, or an internal knowledge base article or something like that, you could have a more technical kind of matter of fact voice, but things that go out to a customer or that are customer facing, they could have that other front facing kind of voice, right?
100%. Yes, exactly. The context of the content creation will determine the kind of rules and roles that you will pass to the model from an instruction set perspective, ensuring that. So totally to your point, the internal communication or the internal notes or the content created might have a certain collegial voice to it. The content that's created for external consumption might have a certain flair for formality. And so I think Absolutely. I think that type of flexibility in brand voice is totally what our customers expect of us. And that's what we sort of aspire to meet to and create.
Well, you know what I think is cool about that is, you know, I go back to the example of the white paper. Content production then becomes kind of everybody's job in an organization, right? And so like if you have a white paper that somebody in engineering wrote, but marketing wants to use that to promote a new feature or something like that, can the AI then kind of repurpose that engineering document into something that's customer facing?
Absolutely. Look, we dog food our products all the time. The example that you just gave, I'm smiling a little bit because our marketing team definitely would like our engineers to speak in more marketing friendly tones and our own products and capabilities to at least do a first cut from the technical documentation to extract sort of the business value. What are the, you know, what are the key highlights instead of this 17-page dissertation on the features and capabilities? Like, what are the like top three things given our customer profile and how you're thinking about it? So that's step one. But then our marketing team, you know, goes through it, shapes it, and forms it. I think of these first drafts as something that allows you to react and respond to something as opposed to
staring at a blank piece of paper.
Exactly. Staring at a blank piece of paper after you've synthesized a 17-page technical documentation.
Yeah, that's rough.
Now you have a two-pager that you could quickly understand and then figure out what you could do and how you want to sort of parcel it out.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting too, I mean, because that can go to the salespeople as well. So salespeople can individually choose documents from within the organization and then present it out to a customer in a brand safe, respecting all the, you know, intellectual property and all that, and send it out to a customer. And then not only just that, but track whether that customer opened it up, read it, how much time they spent on it, all that stuff too, right?
100%. You know, I think for us, you know, when I think about our AI adoption journey, it's not just for using it within our products for our customers, but it's becoming comfortable, having AI being a reflexive instinct. So it becomes as natural as anything else we do. So whether it's our marketing team or our sales team or our engineering team or our finance team or our HR team, leveraging the capabilities of AI, I think is going to be really important.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you said first draft, you know, because like it's always tricky with AI because, you know, you're not sure it's always going to be perfect. So like presenting it and keeping the human in the loop of all that, I think is super valuable.
That's exactly how we advocate. When I think about the space we're in the content management system space, you know, all of us are embracing AI.
Yeah.
Some of us have decided to embrace AI at the expense of the creators, where creators are perhaps perfunctory, maybe tomorrow irrelevant to the creation process. I think our approach has centralized the command and control interface of our product where the creators are the center of it. You take an action that creates a series of content that creates summaries and FAQ pages and stuff like that. And you can clearly see all of the activity that has happened. You can clearly see the impact of that activity in terms of hours saved. You know, it saved you 400 hours worth of work. It costs $17 in terms of LLM. Very clear, very transparent. That's how we're thinking about it, and that's how we're approaching our journey for AI. You know, one of the big things, at least at Brightspot, is we think about AI for our employees. We think about AI for our engineering team, product and engineering team, and we think about AI for our customers. So it's not something we're doing just here in an isolation in one part of the organization. We're thinking about AI holistically as to improving the mundane tactical stuff that AI can do so that we can all do work on the more fun stuff, the more strategic stuff.
You know, that's an interesting point about AI. We've always talked about AI is going to come and rescue us from all the horrible tasks that we don't want to do. But I mean, it seems like a lot of the AI products are actually taking the creative work away from the people and leaving them with the mundane tasks. It seems like, you know, the focus here is more to like get those mundane tasks out of the way and keep the creative on the people, huh?
You know, I've thought about this question a bit. It's why are people, I think it's harder to bite-size the mundane tasks. And so I'll try to see if I can express this clearly because I've given this particular topic a lot of thought. People are trying to use AI for more of the strategic stuff and getting disappointed. Okay, because it's easy to ask somebody for a higher level opinion and getting disappointed. Well, it's not giving me a good, great response.
Right.
It actually takes a lot of intentionality and effort to take out the mundane task. I'm going to give you a good example. I can go and start my Roomba. I have to clean this room a little bit. But if I just move 4 hand swipes, I could probably clean the room and sweep the room. But by the time I go pick up my phone, turn on my Roomba to just clean a small pocket, it actually took multiple steps and probably took a little bit more time. But if I figure out what those steps are and I do it once and automate it, maybe this was not a good example, but you know, I'll go with it because I started it. But if you figure out what those steps are and you create this recipe or automation once, then I don't have to do it ever again. I schedule the Roomba at 6 p.m. It comes and does it because I know every day at 6 p.m. I'm going to have game night with my girls. And so it's 5:45. It comes and cleans it, makes it really easy. But it requires a very intentional forethought to be able to automate it. Otherwise, at 6 p.m. on Friday or 5:55 at Friday, I'm sweeping the floor just so we can have game night at 6 p.m., right? So it took a little bit of intellectual machinations to go through it. And I think that's why people are shying away from it, because it does take a little bit of investment of time and intellectual load to being able to automate it.
Yeah, I totally get that, because I know what you're saying. Sometimes the easy things are the hardest things to do, right?
Yeah.
Because you, like you say, you have to have an intentionality to what you're doing. And if you're going to add automation or orchestration to a task, it can make that task really beneficial to you, but you've got to spend the time to do that work up front.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, when you get AI, it's like, well, it's supposed to do it for me. It's like, well, it's not exactly how it works.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think you get what you put into it. I mean, you can ask 2 years ago, 18 months ago, there's a lot of talk about prompt engineering. Nobody talks about prompt engineering now because we moved past that. But there's a lot about that. And I think it's all in the sense of the investment you put in creates a far better outcome and a far better output.
So if I was like an IT leader, for example, and I was looking to implement AI, I mean, like you've been doing at scale here, what are some of the things that like are the gotchas? Where do you think people are falling down in their approach to AI?
I was recently reading a report, you know, 90% of the people want to leverage AI but have not been able to productionalize it. There's a lot of stats that, you know, people are stuck in the punditry of AI rather than the practicality of AI. It's probably like 3-step process. You got to start somewhere, small, low blast radius. And once you start, so that's number one, start somewhere. Starting is the super important thing. Debating, discussing, 1 minute of decision is worth 500 hours of debates.
For sure.
So I think, so that's step one. And you could start, there's a plethora of opportunity and optionality in terms of models. You know, Amazon has some great ones, Google has some great ones, Microsoft has some great ones, OpenAI, obviously, everybody's used, Anthropic, Claude, great models. Figure out one, start somewhere. The second is, like, what problem sets will you give? It's like really problem sets. What problem sets would you give? Because you want repeatable, you want consistency. I gave that Roomba example a bit ago. You want repeatable and consistency. So you know it's going to happen at the exact same time with the exact same quality over and over again. And so what is the smallest quantum of work you could give? And you could start, I'll give you a good example we're working on now on Bullet 2 is we're taking all of our data for incidents and feeding it into a model, low blast radius, so we can quickly get all of the decisions we have made in terms of incidents, and we have huge infrastructure.
Right.
Thousands and thousands of, tens of thousands of machines across multiple environments for multiple customers, hundreds and hundreds of customers.
Yeah.
And we're feeding it all in so that we can quickly get an answer about a problem and get some very quantifiable information. Here's what happened. This is what we did. This is a very quick feedback. And then that starts to connect. So we're feeding in Jira tickets. We're feeding in you know, different sort of information wells into this thing that'll be able to quickly respond. Simple, low blast radius, no customer exposure, solving an internal problem to accelerate how we manage our own infrastructure. And the third thing is make a decision to start first. I think that's, but be also open to experimenting in a safe manner, taking non-customer data. Like we're taking production environment data in our lower environments, you know, non-customer data that you can basically do. Get an AI policy in place, understand what the AI policy is, what the restrictions are. Like really, really start starting to do that and very experimenting on different capabilities. For example, for us, where we are starting now is for engineers, where we're moving pretty aggressively. We are using a couple of capabilities and products out there. Cursor AI, Replit, OpenAI,
sure.
Amazon's code development, GitHub Copilot. All of these products we're using in the engineering team with varying degrees of success. We're not just turning it on, but we're also thinking about like what's the utilization, what's the impact. That's for the product engineering team. For our platform and our product capabilities, we're turning it on so that we can create, suggest articles, or article titles, differentiated titles. We can suggest for our products summarization, FAQ page, top five things about this article that you need to know, things like that. And then for our marketing organization and for HR organization, you brought earlier, we talked about a great example of how to take developer documentation and synthesize marketing content. Same right. thing for our sales organization. So I think for us, we're starting small and seeding these things across our entire organization so they can start to germinate and we can all benefit as an entire organization from the impact of AI, not only for ourselves, but also thinking for our customers. So it's both.
You know, I like one of the things you said early on there about sort of the escaping decision paralysis. And I see that with so many organizations where they talk and talk and talk and talk about it, but they don't ever get any practical experience with it in solving their problems. And I think with AI, it's changing so incredibly rapidly that by the time, you know, some of these organizations make a decision, they need to start over again because the landscape's changed completely. How do you avoid, you know, getting trapped in that?
Yeah. I was reading another statistic last year. I think a lot of companies Fortune 100 companies, a lot of companies made AI decisions that they're sort of revisiting because they were either too early on and or too myopic or too something. And I think you just have to make small bets rather than big, bold bets picking one thing. We don't know who the winner in this AI evolution is. I mean, we have three or four cloud providers. I think, you know, you can pick one and you could be probably right with any one of them. I think on the AI side, you know, model and diversity, we have millions of models out there. There's a lot of optionality. And there's a lot of stuff happening. The evolution cycle is very quick. Cloud yeah. took decades to adopt. Internet took, you know, maybe five decades to evolve.
To where we are today, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, to where we are today. Mobile, you know, shorter time frame. Internet, shorter time frame. Each one is short. With AI, it's like every month the evolution is happening. I think for CIOs and CTOs is one, really understanding your business value, your business proposition. Having an AI policy that it's not something, I mean, many organizations have policies they haven't looked at. When was the last time we reviewed some policy? I think with AI, you have to constantly evolve. So that's one. Yeah. There needs to be intellectual flexibility and organizational dexterity in the adoption of AI. And the ability to do small experimentation as opposed to whole hog making big bets, I think is going to be very important till... And maybe the ground will never settle. I don't know. I don't know if anybody has the answer. And yeah. I think that's why smaller organizations like ours, mid-sized organization, who have the ability to be extremely flexible, are bringing to bear AI capabilities in our products much at a much more faster and nimbler pace than some of the larger organizations.
Yeah, no, I think the cost dynamics are changing drastically too. I was just reading an article where, you know, just a few years ago it was $20 per million tokens, and now it's 7 cents per million tokens. So I mean, like that dynamic is it's quickly like these large language models are quickly becoming commoditized, which is great for a business like yours, right? Because that rolls to the bottom line, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the commoditization is going to be very helpful. Where we are today is people are depending on foundational models by large companies.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to remain. But what's happening is because the cost to maintain and deploy and sustain and the cost to create both are coming down dramatically in orders of magnitude. And so for a mid-sized organization like ours, small organization like ours, we are completely equipped to now host our own models inside our own ecosystem without actually depending on some of the large providers that are out there. And I think that's a big plus for us. When I say our products are going to have AI enmeshed in it, it's going to be where people think about suggestion and Clippy being the suggestion sort of model.
Oh, no, like, not Clippy.
and I think Clippy was 2 decades, 3 decades ahead of its time.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to say what Clippy was, but yeah.
Exactly. I'm sure many in the audience wouldn't even know what Clippy is.
probably.
But I think that very subtle suggestion mechanism. I mean, great products to me are when a subtle suggestion seems so, like, it's so intuitive that you didn't even realize that you got this. This was, like, so timely. This thing happened. You know, there's notifications. I mean, Apple is a great example of, you know, turning off, putting on quiet mode when you're in a meeting. It's like, I didn't ask it to do it. It just happened for me, right? Yeah. It's gotta be magical like that. And when I think the opportunity and the potential for our products to have those sort of magical aha moments, like, whoa, it did that for me and I didn't have to think about it. That is possible. The delight that customers face, like, you know, the happiness. I mean, I'm a product guy doing usability testing. When I see a customer like, wow, that was cool. That is like, you know, that's why we exist, is to being able to delight our customers in that magical fashion. And I think AI has the potential to do that. It also has the peril to go off kilter. And so we always think about, you know, security, governance, and compliance all the time. I mean, I talk about, like, we got to do X, but we also have to do the cool stuff, but we also have to do the things that give the assurance to our customers that we are doing right by them, that we're doing right by their customers.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because, you know, that's one of those things that I got to imagine, you know, you are being placed in a position of trust with all these documents, right? I mean, mm-hmm. So you have to take that very seriously. I mean, could you talk about how you approach that?
Yeah, it's an enormous responsibility. Like, we have, you know, tons of, so in the last decade and a half, we've built a lot of capabilities around trust, who has access to what, entitlements, accessibility, control, role-based security. You know, all of those things, we have evolved our product capabilities with the security posture that is expected of a modern SaaS product. So that is something we've been at the forefront of since the beginning of our product. I think where now it's becoming even more important is people's ability to synthesize content leveraging AI and making sure, earlier we talked about making sure brand voice, my voice is adhered to. That's one. So we have that being able to generate, but we're also putting human in the loop. So as an additional check and a measure and a check and balance that even though this content was created by AI and we have percentile, how much of the content was created by AI versus by the original author, 100%, 90%, 10%, 0%. So you can actually see the percentile. And obviously the risk score kind of changes. So every piece of content, as you interface with AI, both the request and the response is understood, measured, the risk scored, you know, PII, PCI, PHI, what have you, the entirety of the sort of risk scoring. We provide that to our customers so that they can see it. Now, it's not our remit to block those conversations.
Right?
It's not. But our product, leveraging the AI policies of the customers, will be able to make the decision whether this particular topic is blocked. I can never talk about this topic, or I can talk about this topic, or this is a content I can create or I can't create. What are the permissions that allow me to do it? These are the models I have access to, and these are the models I don't have access to. So all of those things are very sort of, you know, we're very pragmatic, and we take the responsibility of being stewards and guardians of our customer content very seriously. We always have. And with AI, I think that there is a deepening of that responsibility. There is a deeper understanding and appreciation of that responsibility. So we empower our customers with the right kinds of tools, but also with guardrails that they have come to learn and trust from us.
Well, and it seems like, you know, what you're describing is actually would potentially be an improvement to their security and governance around their tools. Because, I mean, really what we're talking about is a very complex thing here. Because you could take a engineering document, right? And then try to transfer that into something that's customer facing, but there might be proprietary information in that document that, you know, a person would just grab it and go with it. But
absolutely,
you know, by putting in these checkpoints and approval processes, it sounds like you could actually kind of wrangle, you know, more governance and control over your information, right?
100%. It's so funny you should say this, because just literally 24 hours ago, we were talking about automating some of the developer documentation that we do. Mm-hmm. Now, developers can be quite colorful in their language sometimes when they are putting engineering comments. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, external versus internal commentary.
Right.
That's one. But sometimes, you know, mistakes happen, accidents happen. And being able to completely automate the process by which internal developer documents goes out straight into a customer from a pipeline perspective. So in our need for speed and our need for automation and our need for leveraging AI, we still always have to have guardrails and control in point. So we're looking to incorporate those control points in, even in our own internal documentation, and bring to bear those same type of control and governance points for the product and capabilities we create. I mean, this is the challenge,
yeah.
Right? The velocity by which you want to deploy something needs to be measured, and monitoring needs to happen before you can turn it on. So it's good to create a lot, but you need to, there's a choke point, but you know, you have a human in the loop, but you need more automation tools around that person to be able to help with the assessment of all of these documents that have been created.
The people we're talking about who create the documentation, I think they're under more pressure right now than ever to, one, create more document, produce more, but to do more with less, too. And it seems like this is a great way to really approach that problem, because, you know, these folks are struggling with all that, I would imagine.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, I think a good example is, you know, I create one article. I need this article. I've created an article about our next landing on the moon. It's a great article. Now I want this article to be curated for a 14-year-old person, a 34-year-old person, and a 54-year-old person. Different things. 54, maybe a little bit of nostalgia. 34, a little bit of more science fiction. 14-year-old inspiring to be STEM.
STEM leaders.
STEM leaders, exactly. So, you know, same content about a person who just landed on the moon in the year 2026, but now you have three variations. Maybe you want to put it for a male audience, and a female audience might have different tonality. Maybe you want it to be in Spanish and French and German,
Languages. Different languages are a real big deal too. I mean, that's a tricky one. Like, repurposing content for different languages is hard.
Exactly. So now you can see I've created one article, but my audience is quite diasporic. I have such a wide diaspora of different age groups, different genders, different languages, and perhaps even regional nuance.
Yeah.
French spoken in Quebec versus French spoken in France. So might be regional nuances. You might want to try different titles. What entices the audience? What actually globs onto it? You might want an FAQ page. So you can see how one piece of work has spawned such a quantum of effort that I call it the create cause loop. I created one article, but the impact and cause that I have to do is quite big.
Yeah.
And so do more with less, you know. Yes, could I hire a translation person? Yes. Could I hire somebody to write multiple article types for a 14-year-old? Yes. But that's a lot of work and a lot of coordination, a lot of... What if I, as a content creator, could do all of that and then send all of this to the appropriate editorial staff who could take a look at it and approve this, as opposed to now having 20 people create it and then going through this thing? So I think doing more with less is definitely something that I think AI will unlock. And given our position in helping our customers help through this creation process, but also the management process, I think we're perfectly suited for that.
Choosing a CMS is a big deal. You're talking about a lot of content. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of things to think about here too.
Yeah.
You know, like I've got to, you know, get my policies and guidelines in place. I've got to, you know, find all this documentation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I got to like understand what sort of external sources I want to know. I got to think through like all the guardrails I've got to put in here.
Yeah.
Is that something you guys help with? I mean, how does one go from zero to hero, I guess here, right?
Yeah. What I would say is, from a content perspective, I mean, I was just talking to a customer a couple of hours ago, major financial organization that has huge content, legacy content dating back from 1940s, where they had to migrate. And they had a successful journey. We did a really good job. The question I posed to her, how did you convince your internal team to make such a big shift? Yeah. I see the outcome and I see the performance and I see the goals and I see all the stuff that you're doing, which is amazing. The outcome is great, but it takes intestinal fortitude to be able to convince an organization to change behavior and with the aspiration to move into something far better than you have. It took you 40 hours to make a bug fix in your existing platform today, you know, 40 hours. Now it takes you 4 minutes to configure something so you have this feature and capability. The impact is measurable and palpable and seeable and touchable and tasteable. But before that transformation, there's a lot of communication, change management, decision-making, you know. And by the way, this CTO, this technology did a fantastic job and she had great anecdotes to share with some of our other customers. Step one is, I say we operate best when there is, if content is your business, then Brightspot should be in your business. And there are companies for who content is important, is august. It is the thing they do to communicate, to provide value to their internal audiences or external audiences. And I think that's where Brightspot truly shines. Over a decade and a half, we have become very formulaic in terms of being able to understand a customer and the journey they're going to go through. We help customers assess, understand, help them. We are true partners in the discovery process, in the decision-making process, in the migration process. We've seen a lot of different use cases. We've seen content you wouldn't believe. People making edits in 2010 version of Microsoft Excel to Word and changing those processes and behaviors and bringing it all into our system. So you've seen a lot. And I like to think that when people come to us, we're true partners in this journey. And it's not just about giving them a content management solution. It's about enabling a new digital experience inside their organization that will drive content velocity, content creation, adjudication, policies and procedures that gives them comfort that their content is being created in the right manner and going to the right audience at the right time. That's what we do, and we do it really, really well. And we've done it over and over again. While I say we're formulaic, we're also very cognizant that every time we do an implementation, we learn something new that builds into this formulary of decision-making process. We're surprised to be not surprised because we've seen so many different things. I mean, we could almost write a book on some of the things we have seen being able to bring to bear to the marketplace, but we're not afraid of it. You know, we lean into it and when people come like, well, I hate to tell you this, but this is going to be a very complicated one. I hate to tell you this. It starts with an apology. I don't know why our customers are so humble. They're so great, but
well, because it's a big problem you're trying to solve for them. I mean, it is complicated.
It is.
They're dealing with a big mess. Yeah,
it is. And our customer, well, this is going to be the worst one you're going to see through. And we're like, probably so, but we have been through this, and we'll be there every step of the way as you go through this. And to me, I think it's the end state, right? We start, we do the stuff, heavy lifting, goes through, you know, communication protocol, how are we going to do the stand-ups, the communication, the weekly review, the monthly review, the quarterly review. But at the end of it, and the end of this journey of some amazing value creation, because some of our companies that we work with are publicly traded companies that have really clear value drivers. They're PE-owned companies, they're VC-backed companies, they're privately held companies. Each one of them has a value journey that we are helping unlock. And the end of that journey, when they have this sort of executive review that we have finished the Brightspot implementation, and this is our content velocity, this is our time on page, this is like the business metrics that we help impact and move up north, like that is like the most, like that is what makes me the happiest and our team the happiest.
Well, so talk a little bit about how you measure the success.
There's probably two aspects of success measurement. One is are we impacting what I say velocity and utilization of our product? And this is our success, but it's also very emblematic of the business success. Velocity, how much content, how many content creators are there? How many content editors are there? Are they taking, before they use Brightspot, they took 17 steps to author our content. Now they're taking 3 steps. Is the workflow we designed for them actually working? Really thinking through the workflow, it goes from create, modify, edit, editorial review to, and now it's out there. So it's like, to me, it's a lot of the internal mechanisms of utilization, creation, causation. So we're looking at that. That we are slavishly attentive to because it's important to us. Did our product meet and exceed the business requirements? And we're very attentive to that. So I would say that's one. The other is outcome or performance metrics, performance marketing. Once you deployed the content, you know, how many pages, hits did you get? Did the design system we deployed actually lend itself to people reading and discovering the content? Did we build the right mechanism? Is the workflow that the customers are going through, your end customers, our customers' customers, that are going through, getting the right content, getting to the right place, decisions that they need to make faster? And so we're very attentive to that. Both aspects of it. The first one is an early indicator of our success. Very quickly, we can understand like what's going on. And then the latter is very indicative of the success of our customers. The bet that they have made in choosing a sophisticated enterprise system with security in mind, like that's the bet they're making.
That's awesome. Because I love the you know, you mentioned partnership. And this is one of those things that it's not just so straightforward that you can just buy a product off the shelf and come in. You know, it's integrating with like literally every part of your business. And, you know, you talk about content as the center of a business. I think nowadays, more so than ever, every business is in the content business, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, because if you look at, you know, the sales cycle of things. The sales begin and end on Google, YouTube, TikTok, you know, things like that. Everybody kind of has to become a content company these days.
Absolutely. You know? One thing I want to go back to the previous point I was making is, you know, I've been a buyer of multiple enterprise systems. And post the sales cycle, one of the things that vendors and partners don't tend to do is really focus on the value impact. And 3 years later, when the renewal time comes up, suddenly, you know, vendors and partners show up and like they talk about renewal. I think for us, renewal is a outcome of quality delivered day over day, week over week, month over month, quarter over quarter, year over year. It shouldn't be a conversation. It should be the obvious decision. And I think our delivery teams, our service teams, our customer service success teams are really focused on driving business value day in and day out. So just wanted to call that out, wanted to make sure I covered that. But to your point, every company has content, whether it's internal content for your employees, benefits, communication, your posture on how you give back to the community, you know, and all that. All of that stuff is really important for people to have a well of information to being able to do that, no matter how small the company is or how big the company is. I think that's a very important consideration. And for larger companies with multiple organizational units, with multiple divisions, multiple leaders, I think it's a compounding issue today where everybody starts with hunting and pecking. Like, where is my stuff? For instances where we have installed our product, it doesn't start with this voyage of discovery to content. It's there in a systematized manner, segmented, orchestrated, organized in a way where your first click is to the right content.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so where do you see all of this going? What's in the future for Brightspot? What's in the future for you? Where do you see it going?
The bet we have made is, you know, there are plenty of companies in the space where they are trying to aggregate 17 different solutions in a Frankenstein manner. So that's one way to solve the problem. The other bet is to have thousands of different capabilities and companies with very loosely coupled integrations that, like, okay, well, yes, we kind of partner with them because they're on our website. And so we partner with them. But God help you with the implementation and integration. I think we're following a middle path. We want to be the best CMS company in the world, period, full stop, bar none.
Yeah.
And we want to be very intentional about the adjacent capabilities that what our customers want. What do I mean by that? So we will have an A/B testing tool. We will have analytics components inside of our product. But we'll pick the best of breed that exists in the marketplace out there, the best of the best. And we will incorporate and integrate them seamlessly into our product. So you never have to step out of it. It's completely seamless. If you want to do A/B testing, we've picked the two best in the world, and now we've integrated with them. And you never have to leave the mechanism, the modalities, the workflow that you already experience in our CMS. And so that's our approach, and that's how we're thinking about going to the marketplace. So in the two extremes are one with landlocked capabilities, 18 different products, loosely coupled, built through acquisition. And the other is thousands of capabilities available at beck and call, poorly understood. Ours is the central point. We're taking the middle path, the best CMS in the world, with some of the best integrations in the world, bringing the best capabilities to solve business problems.
Well, Ravi, I just want to thank you for being on. It's been a real pleasure. I find this stuff super fascinating because I think it's such a valuable tool in an organization.
Thank you for the opportunity for having this conversation. You know, I really appreciate being able to share what our amazing team does day in and day out. I just get to be the pretty face, being able to tell.
You're the eye candy.
I'm the eye candy, tell the story. But, you know, I think for me, it's, you know, our product and engineering team, our customer success team, our delivery teams, day in and day out, working really hard to create amazing value for our customers. I mean, I at the start of this conversation, I mentioned we were just coming out of a cab. So this is very fresh.
And you mean by that customer advisory board, not a taxi.
Yes. Yes.
Or a pedicab in Austin. Right?
Yeah. Coming out from a customer advisory board meeting where, you know, we learn from our customers. You know, I started the cab by discussing our product roadmap. This year, our product roadmap isn't about 5 million features. It's about more wood behind fewer arrows. We're going to do a couple of things, but we're going to do it really well and very intentionally. We're a mature product, and we don't want to get into the feature factory competing on, you know, buttons and knobs, and we have added 17 different levers, checkboxes that everybody's doing. No, I think that shows lack of confidence from a product perspective. We're very confident with what we have. It's for us, it's about synthesizing, harmonizing the customer feedback that we get, and creating one or two things that is going to create differentiated value. And when customers talk about us, like, wow, this is something really valuable. And so I think that's probably the last thought I'd leave you with is you know, I'm backed by, you know, we're customer fanatics. It's a leadership principle we have, you know, leaning into our customers and deep customer empathy that drives us. It's our sort of one of our founding principles.
I just want to say thanks so much for being on, sharing it with us, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for watching. I'd love to hear from you in the comments. Give us a like, think about subscribing, and I'll see you in the next one.